Greetings once again, America. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the Worldview. That's right, it's the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney, right here at theweeklyworldview.com. The show that is unconstrained by the traditional bounds of broadcast media. We go worldwide to a worldwide audience every week. It's the show where we don't take calls and we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do take the events of the week and focus them through the lens of original thought. So good to have you with us here as we launch into Mother's Day week. Today's Mother's Day, and so the whole week we'll be celebrating mothers, especially around my house. Just want to wish all the mothers out there all the best in everything they do. And I want to open the show this week with a story that's a little bit embarrassing, but I want to get some feedback from fellow 40 plus types, okay? Earlier in the week, I noticed that my toenails needed to be clipped, okay? And so I go to the junk drawer, I find the nail clippers, and I go sit down on the couch and I commence to clipping my toenails. And halfway through the first foot, I feel like I'm running a marathon or something. I have to stop, sit back, and breathe. And I'm thinking to myself, oh, what a geezer you are. I mean, is this a sign of being 40 plus, or am I just so out of shape? It's unbelievable. I mean, it took me 15 minutes. I had to take 3 breaks to get through my toenails. And Is this something that's typical once you're over the hill? Or, you know, maybe do I need to think about maybe exercising a little more? I don't know. But certainly was an insight into how my physical health will be deteriorating now for the rest of my natural life here on this physical plane. And none too cheery, frankly, to think about that. But I digress. Let us move into the events of the week, and we're going to start with the great Oprah fried chicken fiasco. Actually, it's a grilled chicken fiasco, I suppose. But Oprah Winfrey, as you'll remember, teamed up with Kentucky Fried Chicken to do a promotion on their new Kentucky Grilled Chicken, where she gave away free chicken. Now, I was under the impression that Oprah was actually paying for it. I didn't realize it was a promotion in concert with PepsiCo and KFC and all of that. So I dutifully printed out my coupon. A number of us did as we were working at the studios over at KGov Radio and at the offices of American Right to Life. We dutifully downloaded our coupons legally within the time limit. And we went and got us some free chicken. And then now I found out that Oprah wasn't paying for it, that it was actually Kentucky Fried Chicken that was paying for it. And anyway, the chicken wasn't bad. Tasted pretty good, but it would have tasted a lot better in hindsight if Oprah had actually paid for it. But apparently she did not. But a story from the London Sunday Herald talks about the great Oprah Winfrey KFC debacle. By the weekend, after Oprah had told everyone to go to her website, KFC franchises by the weekend were running out of food as freeloaders flocked to Oprah's website. Stores were having to close up, and hungry diners, coupons still in hand, were being sent home empty-bellied but full of anger. By Friday, according to the London Sunday Herald, Kentucky Fried Chicken had been forced to make a humiliating statement abandoning the promotion after just 2 days of its advertised 2-week run, citing, quote, overwhelming demand, unquote. Now, to add to the mayhem, according to the Herald, folks were flouting the one coupon per person rule and photocopying the vouchers wholesale. Apparently, the lack of a barcode or serial number on the coupon was a fundamental design flaw. So, folks, if one were to look at this through the lens of original thoughts, so to say, this could be a prelude of what's going to happen to America. You know, now that our government has, you know, this is socialism in action, offering people free stuff. Actually, that might be like communism, actually. I'd have to look up the definition, but it's free stuff for people. And when you offer free stuff for people, You tend to get overrun by freeloaders and bums and good hardworking citizens like myself who just wanted a free piece of chicken. But you can't just keep... Chickens don't grow on trees, for crying out loud. And even if they did grow on trees, you'd eventually run out of chickens. KFC ran out of chicken. Yeah, I think this is a foretaste of what the federal government is in for now that our government has essentially promised, what, not a chicken in every pot, but, I don't know, $1 billion or $10 billion or $100 billion of free money for every inept banker and business guy who can get in line and fill out the forms and ask for it. I wonder if the oversight on these stimulus and bailout funds, I wonder if the oversight will be better than what happened here with the lack of a barcode or a serial number on the Kentucky Fried Chicken coupons. One would think that the oversight of the free money being given away by Barry Ho and the government will be a little more tightly governed. But of course we have nothing. Nothing in the history of these socialists who've taken over the government. There's nothing in their past that would tell us that they're going to be monitoring. Of course, Barry Ho says he's going to be monitoring every penny of the, I forget, is it $2 trillion? Is it $3 trillion? Is it $10 trillion? And what comes after a trillion? Anyway, I think what comes after a trillion? I think the Depression II, I guess. Did I already say this on the air that I find it eerie that before World War II they called World War I the Great War? And, you know, they call the Great Depression the Great Depression. But that could change. Let's hope not. I think I have some financial news later in the show, but that's way, way down on the list. This is much more critical. In an accompanying story, PETA, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, is not amused by this entire Oprah fiasco. That's right. In fact, this is right from PETA's website. PETA, who recently named Oprah their Person of the Year in 2008 for her work to raise awareness about factory farming, have decided that the talk show hostess must have been duped into working with KFC. That's right, they're convinced in their own minds and in their own reality that Oprah must have been duped because, after all, she's such a good person. She wouldn't work with these chicken murderers, would she? She must have been duped. They must have told her KFC stood for something besides Kentucky Fried Chicken. And I didn't think of something amusing to do here. KFC, what could that stand for? Kindness and fun for children. That must be what they did. Oprah, it's the Kindness and Fun for Children campaign. We want you to work and issue free coupons. And Oprah was just duped. She's not very bright, obviously. She's not a very astute business person, is she? No, she's only worth a couple of billion dollars, or 20, or 50, I don't know. Anyway, she's probably not that bright. KFC came along and took advantage of her. Here's the statement issued by PETA on their website. This was a spokesman for PETA. We actually have tape of this, is that right? We have the audio? Okay, what's the gentleman's name? We didn't get the gentleman's name, but this is the audio from a statement that was released by PETA regarding the great Oprah chicken fiasco. Roll that tape. Chickens pay a high price for that free meal at KFC. The company allows its suppliers to scald birds to death in defeathering tanks and to break their wings and legs as they're shackled. When PETA heard about Oprah's promotion, we immediately wrote to her privately to ask if KFC had deliberately misled her, as it had misled consumers on its website. Considering how strongly Oprah has publicly criticized cruelty to chickens in the food industry, PETA believes that Oprah was likely the victim of the very consumer deception practices that PETA cited in its recent complaint about KFC to the Federal Trade Commission. In a letter to Oprah, PETA President Ingrid Newkirk herself has written, ladies and gentlemen, and I am going to quote our president, "I believe you, Oprah, had no idea that KFC has refused to take any action to stop its suppliers from scalding birds alive and breaking birds' wings and legs during live shackling. Oh, my dear sister, please." Okay, is that all we have from him? Now, we don't know what his name was, but isn't it strange how the men who are associated with PETA have a tendency to drop in a lot of extra S's into whatever they say? That was just bizarre. Yeah, was that the same guy that challenged Miss California about the homosexual marriage debate? Is he moonlighting for PETA? Anyway, I just want to point something out in this PETA statement, ladies and gentlemen, that struck me as odd, is they claim that KFC scalds the birds in defeathering tanks. Now, that very well may be true. I mean, you got to take the feathers off, right? You throw the chickens into a big boiling cauldron of water. I participated in such an activity when I was about 7 years old. I remember. I had a hatchet in my hand. We were to run around and catch the chickens. That's right. They took the hatchet away. And they said, little Doug, you just catch the chickens and bring them over here to Ray, the farmer, and he'll chop their heads off. And I remember chasing those chickens. And let me tell you what, that was no walk in the park. No, those chickens got downright mean. But anyway, what was I? Oh, now, so the defeathering tanks, I've witnessed myself. Yes. Now, what we were to do was we were to catch the chickens. You grabbed them by the head, and you swung them around like a lasso, and that would break their neck, rendering the chicken more than unconscious, as a matter of fact, rendering the chicken dead. And then you threw them in the big pot of water. And now, wait a second. Let me think back now. This is a lot going back a lot of years. Oh, then the head was cut off. And then you threw the chicken into the big cauldron to defeather the chicken. Now, so the defeathering tanks, I'm not going to argue with the fact that it's possible some live chickens are thrown into these scalding defeathering tanks. And what a tragedy that is. I'm not going to argue with that. But what's this deal with breaking their wings and legs as they are shackled? I mean, come on, lady. We're trying to process 10,000 chickens a day. Who's got time to shackle them? Besides, chickens don't need to be shackled. They're not that bright. They generally don't get away. I don't know who's shackling live chickens, but I don't know. I mean, that sounds like something that goes on in the basement at a. All right, I'm not even going to say that. Okay, we're just going to leave that story aside. That's it. The great Oprah debacle. That's the end of that, and it is sad. And in a related story, Dateline Miami from the Reuters Wire, a Florida woman has been indicted for keeping her dead mother's body in a bedroom for 6 years while collecting more than $200,000 in pension and Social Security benefits. Yeah, Penelope Jordan of Sebastian, Florida, was charged by a federal grand jury last week with Social Security fraud and theft. According to the U.S. attorney there in Miami, police found the decaying body of her mother, Timmy Jordan, on a bed in a spare bedroom at the mother's home in late March when they were called to investigate a report of nuisance cats. Okay, all right. Now the cats, I don't know how that fits into the story. Anyway, local media reported that the 61-year-old woman told police that her mother had died of old age and she kept the remains because she couldn't afford burial expenses. Now, an autopsy found no signs of foul play. And according to the local paper, police found many cats on Jordan's property, but she denied they were hers. So the cats are just an ancillary, just a little weird. Why were all the cats around? I don't know. But ladies and gentlemen, here's a lady who bilked the United States government out of over $60,000 and $175,000 from a military. She built the government out of almost $200,000. Where's the oversight there? Is somebody keeping track? I mean, here's a dead woman collecting benefits for 6 years, and we've got Barry Ho and the Democrats and the liberal Republicans in Congress who have promised trillions of dollars to anyone who can find their way to a line and fill out a form. It just worries me is all, okay? I mean, oversight. Like I say, there's nothing in the history of our federal government to make us believe that they're going to be able to keep track of any of this money, for crying out loud. All right, Dateline New York City, and one more related story. City officials this month began charging rent to some families staying in homeless shelters. That's right, the policy applies to shelter residents who have income from jobs. and they could be expected to pay up to half of their earnings to the homeless shelter. Yeah, that's right. Well, hey, you can't just run a homeless shelter on hope and love and peace and joy and flowers. Somebody's got to put in the plumbing. Somebody's got to put together the slop that they feed these people in these homeless shelters. And it's just another foretaste of what we've got to come. The great homeless shelter that is America is eventually going to have to start charging people for all this free dough they're handing out. Now, I've got a quote here from a single mother who lives there. She says that this new rule will ruin the chances of her saving enough money to get an apartment. And I would say to this homeless lady there in New York, it's the homeless shelter itself that's ruining your chances of getting your life together. I mean, if there were no shelter, you'd have to clean up, straighten out, and form relationships with normal people to try to pull yourself out of this degraded state you're in before you descend to the level of a cave dweller, for crying out loud. I mean, it's not paying rent that ruins your hope for the future. It's all that free stuff they're promising you. Doug McBurney on the Weekly Worldview. As we dive headlong into the events of the week, so good to have you with us. We're going to move right into the culture file. And this first story was, I was debating whether it should be in the culture file or the domestic tranquility file. And I decided to put it in the culture file for whatever reason, and you can decide if I've mislabeled it. From the Associated Press, investigators say 24-year-old Joseph Jimenez fatally shot 25-year-old Scott Riley after they argued over a drinking game at a party in Bridgeport, about 15 miles outside of the city of brotherly love, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Now, authorities say the men began arguing over the game, then met up outside where Riley mocked Jimenez and challenged him to shoot. Jimenez drew a concealed .40-caliber handgun and fired, striking Riley in the neck. Riley died at the hospital. What's the lesson here, children? Well, when you get involved with drinking games, you never know what kind of nut job you're going to end up sitting across the table from. So one would do well to avoid drinking games and parties like this in general. Now, how old were these folks? 24 and 25. That sounds about right, doesn't it? All right. Also, you'll want to bring more than just smart aleck comments to a gunfight. That's what Mr. Riley learned. You know, all of his smart aleck comments didn't do him much good when Mr. Jimenez drew a .40-caliber handgun. So, but just another sad story in the continuing saga of the downfall and collapse of what once was known as Western Christendom. All right. Let's see here now. Into the culture file. Now, this story is like a flashback. Didn't I do this a week ago? You probably heard the story. About 50 people were hurt. This is from an Associated Press story. About 50 people were hurt in an underground crash in downtown Boston. A trolley crashed into another trolley in the underground system there in Boston. Injuries, a number of people were injured, but the injuries were not life-threatening. Thank heaven. Now, the conductor who was driving the trolley apparently told police he was texting his girlfriend before the collision. Apparently, immediately before the collision, he's typing out a text message to his girlfriend. So what is the reaction of the Solomonic governing officials there in Boston? The head of the Boston Transit Authority said that he will ban all train and bus operators from even carrying cell phones on board. Yeah, that's what I just said. Yeah, it's like that old George Carlin joke that I quoted a week ago, 2 weeks ago. It's just ridiculous. I think the Boston Area Transit Authority might want to think about banning its bus drivers and trolley conductors from having wives or girlfriends. That would eliminate the problem as well, would it not? I'm just saying, it's worth debating. If you're debating something as stupid as banning cell phones, why not debate something as equally ridiculous? Let's ban their wives and girlfriends so they have no one to text. In fact, let's ban them from having any social relationships whatsoever. I know, we'll keep them in cages in the underground bowels of the city until it's time for them to drive. And all right, let's just move on. I think I've gotten all the mileage I can out of that story. Dateline, Alpine, California, from the Associated Press. A Marine Corps helicopter crashed in a remote area of Southern California, killing the two men on board. The Super Cobra helicopter from the 3rd Marine Aircraft Wing crashed shortly before midnight Tuesday last week, right outside the Miramar Station, Marine Corps Air Station there in Miramar, outside of beautiful San Diego, California. And this story only caught my eye, obviously, because I was a jarhead once. And I was in the Air Wing. I was in the 1st Marine Air Wing, Okinawa, Japan. And I managed to spend my entire tour of 4 years in the military, in the Air Wing, without ever getting on a helicopter, and I'll tell you why. When I arrived in the Far East there, my first operation was an operation called Team Spirit, which was with the South Koreans. We went to Pohang, South Korea, set up an airfield, and we made like we were fighting the Russians. And it was all well and good, don't get me wrong, but within the first few days of that operation, I was in the command post radio center, and three helicopters crashed. One crashed by itself, killing, I forget, like 20 or 30 guys. It was horrible. And a day or two later, two helicopters crashed into each other and killed some ridiculous amount, 30, 40 more guys. And this is all just practice, okay? This wasn't even war. I never heard a shot fired in anger when I was in the Marine Corps. Thanks to the grace of God and policies of Ronald Reagan, I suppose. But that etched in my mind the idea that maybe these helicopters aren't as safe as I've heard. And so I meticulously worked and positioned myself to avoid ever getting on a helicopter my entire time in the Marine Corps. In fact, one time we had a drill where I was playing a wounded soldier and I had to lay on the soccer field. Well, wait a minute. Back then they were still football fields. I'm sorry. I had to lay on the football field, act like a wounded soldier, and they had to come and pick me up. I made sure, before this drill started, I got with one of the corpsmen, and I said, hey, buddy, make sure I'm one of the guys that gets put into an ambulance and not onto a helicopter, if you could do that for me. And my buddy, my good Navy corpsman buddy, took care of me, and I was put onto a four-wheeled vehicle that rolled along the surface of the earth rather than a helicopter. Just feel terrible. This was a Super Cobra helicopter. You know, I was in the Marine Corps 20-some years ago, and they were flying Super Cobras. And I would think that the Marines would have got a new helicopter by now, but I guess not. Anyway, I think they last a long time, but just a sad story. A sad story. All right. Let's see. Diving deeper and deeper into the culture file, and the headline jumps off the page, M&M. Yeah, M&M. There's a story about M&M. Now, this isn't the sweet chocolate candy treats from the Mars Company. This is a pop star from a number of years ago. He's a rap star. And shock of all shocks, to my utter disbelief, he has confessed that he was hooked on prescription medications and drugs and that he almost overdosed on methadone somewhere near the apex of his glorious career. Shock of all shocks, Eminem was a junkie. Now, apparently, he's cleaned up. Apparently, there was no homeless shelter for him. He had too much money in the bank. But he's cleaned himself up, and he has an eagerly awaited new album, according to The Sun, the London Sun newspaper. Now, I don't know who is eagerly awaiting Marshall Mathers' new record. That's Eminem, yeah. Who could possibly be eagerly awaiting this guy's new record? Apparently, there's a number of people out there who are. And that's just sad. Another comment on the decline and fall of Western civilization. But in the story, we find out that, let's see here. He became hooked on prescription meds. He overdosed on methadone. He was treated for dependency on sleep medications. He got himself off. Then he suffered a relapse. He was involved with Vicodin, and he enjoyed, apparently, his Valium. Okay, shock of all shocks, right? I know you're all stunned in disbelief. He said, quote, rap was my drug. It used to get me high, then it stopped getting me high. Then I had to resort to other things to make me feel that. Now rap's getting me high again. To the detriment of Western civilization, apparently. Mr. Mathers is again getting high on rap, and he'll be offending and basically denigrating and degenerating and devoluting, I don't know if that's a word, the culture in general. So Eminem is back, and he's apparently sober for the moment, but unfortunately that means he's releasing rap records, which, well, I suppose it's better than him killing himself on drugs. Although that's open to debate as well. All right. Paula Abdul, shock of all shocks, she claims she's a drug addict too. Yeah. Oh, I know. That's shocking. She apparently she sang on the show. She apparently does a show called American Idol, which I'm not familiar with the broadcast, but the name is very offensive to me. I mean, to have a show called American Idol, the Bible says don't worship idols, flee idols. The Bible and God are generally don't look kindly upon idols, okay? And here's the most popular show apparently in the country is called American Idol. And we've got a drug-addled singer from the 80s who sang a song and bared her soul over the drug habit that she claims she recently kicked. Now, she says, she swears up and down, according to this article from, where was this article from? This is from Reuters. She swears that she never filmed an episode of American Idol while under the influence. Okay, so that's my theories out the window. I don't know what's wrong with the chick, all right? She's just a whack job. Do I want to do this thing on the LA Unified? I'm going to do the thing about the schools, and then I'm going to talk about this Japanese pop star. All right, now, there's a problem out in Los Angeles County Unified School District. The problem is, what do they do with teachers who are in trouble? Yeah, they've got about 160 teachers out there and other staff who are accused, among other things, of sexual contact with students, harassment, theft, and drug possession. And they're all still on the payroll, 160 teachers accused of all kinds of nefarious activity, still on the payroll. Nearly all of them are still being paid, and all told, they collect about $10 million in salaries per year. Even as the district, the LA Times tells us, even as the school district is contemplating widespread layoffs of teachers because of the financial shortfall. Isn't that bizarre? I mean, LA, I'm sure, how many teachers are there in LA? Probably 100,000, 10,000? I don't know. There's a bunch of them. LA is a big town. But you got 160 teachers, you know, they stole something, they got caught with drugs, whatever, and they're being paid. And they're debating now what to do with them. Should they keep paying them? Should they give them make-work projects? Or, I know, we should give each one of them a bulldozer and have them begin bulldozing the public school infrastructure in Los Angeles County so that perhaps the fall of Western civilization can be abated to some degree, just slightly, by bulldozing the public schools into the ground. All right, now, Dateline Tokyo from Reuters. A Japanese TV star who our Japanese correspondent tells me is basically the Japanese version of Justin Timberlake type guy, okay? Very popular. This guy's name is Tsuyoshi Kusanagi, a 34-year-old gentleman who shot to fame 20 years ago as a member of a boy band there in Japan, was discovered drunk and naked and screaming in a Tokyo park in the early hours of the morning last week. He resisted arrest. The police then wrapped him in a blanket, threw him in the paddy wagon, took him to jail. Now, prosecutors decided on Friday not to charge him with any crime because he's just so popular and just so cute, apparently. They just decided not to charge him. apparently he asked the police when they picked him up, he asked them what's wrong with being naked. And apparently now Japanese t-shirt makers can't make enough of these t-shirts with that slogan on it. What's wrong with being naked? Yeah. And the incident, according to Reuters, has sparked sympathy for Kusanagi. Many Japanese complained that the slight, serious-looking actor was treated too harshly, especially after he appeared close to tears during a news conference he called to apologize for his behavior. Yeah. So one fan apparently even threatened online to attack the police station where this bozo was being held. So that's the state of Eastern civilization. As we watch Western civilization circle the drain, you've got a Japanese pop star turns up naked, drunk, and screaming in a park, and the entire country, instead of asking him to just please go into a closet and commit Harry Carey in some kind of respectable way, now they all just want to cry for him. View. I'm Doug McBurney, taking you, we finished the culture file, thankfully. That was painful, get through that. And we're going to dive right into, do I want to do the domestic tranquility file? I suppose so. We've been having a lighthearted time here at the Weekly Worldview because it's Mother's Day week and the flowers are blooming and everything's beautiful and we're happy in general. But we've got to dive into the domestic tranquility file. Ladies and gentlemen, our domestic tranquility file here at the Weekly Worldview serves as a weekly reminder that while we are concerned with foreign policy and wars overseas, rightly so, and we're worried about enemies, foreign, the enemies domestic are simply epidemic. There's an epidemic level of murder, bloodshed, chaos, and criminality that is rupturing our society, ladies and gentlemen. And it's generally ignored by the news media, except if a victim is really pretty. Then they cover the stories of these horrible murders and slaughters that are taking place on a daily basis. But generally, it goes unnoticed. So here at the Weekly Worldview, we're keeping track as best we can. Now, we can't keep up with all the stories, but we're doing the best job we can to remind you, ladies and gentlemen, that your government, local, state, and federal, is failing on a daily basis in one of their main constitutionally authorized functions, and that is to preserve domestic tranquility. Well, it ain't happening, okay? Dateline Erie, Pennsylvania, Northwestern Pennsylvania woman appealing her conviction for swinging her infant at her boyfriend during a 2006 fight has made bail. You heard that right. This woman, she was sentenced in 2007 to up to 10 years in prison for aggravated assault and other charges. She's appealing her conviction. Her name is, I can't pronounce this name, Chaitoria? Anyway, let's call her Miss Graham. Miss Graham, she confessed to police that she swung her son like a baseball bat and hit her boyfriend with the baby. Now, the baby has recovered from a fractured skull. They tell how old the baby was. They don't tell how old the baby was. A baby was at the time. The baby's fine, but what's the deal? Woman gets into an argument with her boyfriend, picks up the baby by the ankles, and swings the baby like a baseball bat at the moron that she's shacking up with. It's just unbelievable. All right, thankfully, no one was killed. From CNN, a man shot and killed his wife and two of their children, then killed himself in Central Florida this week past. Troy Ryan Beller used a high-powered rifle with a scope to shoot his 31-year-old wife, Wendy, when she tried to leave their home. Two of the couple's children, 5-month-old Zach and 7-year-old Ryan, also were killed, but a 13-year-old son got away with the father chasing him out of the garage, down the street, and firing after him with a rifle. Now, We have a quote here from the Polk County Sheriff, Grady Judd. He says, quote, "It is beyond my understanding why a man would shoot and kill his five-month-old baby boy, his seven-year-old baby boy, try to kill his 13-year-old son, shoot his wife, and then turn the gun on himself. There's just no explanation for it." There's no explanation for it, says Polk County Sheriff Grady Judd. Now, Grady, I got a word for you, brother, okay? There's a verse in the Bible that explains this whole situation, okay? And it's just one verse. There's a number of passages, stories, that explain exactly what's going on here. But the verse that came to my mind was Jeremiah 17:9. Warning, 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 Will Robinson, there are Bible verses up ahead. "For those of you in the audience who advocate pluralism and diversity, we know here at the Weekly Worldview that you would not tolerate anyone to dare quote a Bible verse in public, so this warning gives you fair notice that raw, unadulterated truth is about to be uttered." Jeremiah 17:9, "The heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked." Well, that's an explanation for you right there, Grady, and for all of you other folks who every time some husband or wife explodes and slaughters their family, everyone sits around crying, asking why. And the reason why is that the heart of man is deceitful, and it's above all things, and it's desperately wicked. And the government is charged with the responsibility for restricting the amount of damage that the deceitful heart of man can do upon his fellow man by striking terror into the heart of the criminal. And our government, there in Florida, here in Colorado, in New York City, Washington, D.C., our government is failing every day to do that. And so criminals who are generally not very smart people and weak-minded people and people who are just cracking under the pressure, you know, instead of going and buying a bottle of vodka and going on a blackout weekend, they pick up a gun and slaughter their whole family. It's just bizarre. That's what's happening. When you tolerate violence, violence multiplies. All right. And so here's our other. Now, I found that verse, by the way, when I looked up. I remembered that it said that the heart is deceitful above all things, and I opened my software and I broke out my electronic concordance and I searched above all things in the New King James. And there was only two verses. There was Jeremiah 17:9, and there was a much more encouraging verse from the New Testament. 1 Peter, the 4th chapter, starting in the 7th verse, Peter tells us, "But the end of all things is at hand. Therefore be serious and watchful in your prayers, and above all things, have fervent love for one another, for love will cover a multitude of sins." That's an encouraging verse. Now, should our government, the governing officials charged with the administration of justice, should they love criminals? Yes, they should. They should love criminals. They should love them without hypocrisy, you see. For to love without hypocrisy is to create a system of jurisprudence that ensures that crime is rare, and that criminals are restrained from hurting themselves, hurting other people, and hurting God. So if we truly love our neighbor and we truly love the criminal, our system of jurisprudence should work toward his ultimate spiritual rehabilitation, which means harsh penalties inflicted swiftly for crimes for which people are convicted, and of course the swift death penalty for those who commit capital crimes. That would be a much more loving system. And I want to thank Peter for that. All right, now, on into the domestic tranquility file. Dateline Orange, California. An electrical contractor who was having financial problems shot to death his live-in girlfriend and 3.5-year-old son before killing himself this Wednesday past. Orange, California. Very close to paradise on earth there in Orange, California, but here it looks more like hell. Dateline Shreveport, Louisiana, from the Associated Press. Police say a Louisiana man apparently shot and killed his wife and their 3-year-old son and then killed himself. What more to say on that? Dateline Columbia, Illinois, from the Associated Press. A mother and her 2 young boys were found slain Tuesday in a southwestern Illinois home. The husband, in this case, actually reported the crime. He found their bodies. Columbia, Illinois, the heartland. a mother and her two boys slaughtered in their own home. Dateline Rochester, New York, a high school student with ammunition and homemade explosives in his locker used a sawed-off shotgun to kill himself in a campus bathroom while classes were in session. A search of the young man's locker revealed 30 rounds of ammunition, two Molotov cocktail-type devices made of bottles filled with liquid and corked with rags. Authorities wouldn't comment on where the young man may have gotten the gun or how he got into school. They said there was no indication of any plans to harm other students. So apparently he planned to shoot himself at least 30 times and then blow himself up with the Molotov cocktails. I don't know where the school officials have the insight to say that there was no indication of any plans to harm other students. Anyway, Rochester, New York, just up the street where I grew up as a wee young lad. A very picturesque Western New York town. A high school student blows his own head off in the bathroom at high school. So there's your domestic tranquility for you there. Dateline Tampa, Florida. A 21-year-old man was charged with first-degree murder after police said he snatched up his ex-girlfriend's 3-month-old son during a fight and then threw the baby from his car on an interstate highway. The child's lifeless body was found near I-275 north of downtown Tampa early Tuesday this past week. The man, Richard A. McTeer Jr., was captured several hours later. Deputies said he is not the child's father. This just blew my mind. You're mad at your girlfriend, having a fight. You throw her 3-month-old son out of the window of a moving car on an interstate highway. What would a loving justice system do for this young man? Well, I think, and I've thought about this, I think that anyone who throws a baby out of a car, a moving car, resulting in the death of said baby, the justice system should punish him upon conviction, of course. And he should be thrown out of a moving vehicle on an interstate highway at whatever speed the person throwing him decides. Now, the person throwing him could quite possibly be the mother's family. Some of the strong men in the mother's family are probably pretty upset with this guy. And they would get to decide. If they want to throw him once out of... we'd probably have to do it in the back of a pickup truck to make it feasible. But the judge could tell the throwers that if you want to throw him once out of the back of the pickup at 90 miles an hour, we can do that. If you want to throw him several times at, say, 30, 35 miles an hour, we can arrange that as well. Whatever you guys want to do. Just an unbelievable story. What is going on with people against kids these days? What's the deal? I suppose after a generation of 40 years in the wilderness, where our country has legalized the slaughter of children in the womb, the capacity for people to love and care about children has been significantly degraded. And so when they get into a simple fight with their girlfriend, instead of throwing their cell phone or their CDs or their iPod out the window, they throw a living person, a 3-month-old baby, out a window and kill that person. Just devastating. Devastating. Anyway, I've got a 1999 Toyota pickup truck in my garage that I don't use very often, and I'm willing to donate it right now should this gentleman be convicted. Anyway, all right. Now, we can dive into the politics file. We'll start with the politics file. Okay. The big news this week, if you've been listening to conservative radio, is Jeb Bush, the listening tour, and basically the death knell of the grand old party, the Republicans. Former Florida Governor Jeb Bush said this Saturday past that it's time for the Republican Party to give up its nostalgia for the heyday of the Reagan era and look forward, even if it means stealing the winning strategy deployed by the Democrats in the 2008 election. Now, I knew that Jeb Bush had a serious character shimmy when he was the governor and I was down in Pinellas Park, Florida in 2005 when they were murdering Terry Schiavo. And Jeb Bush didn't have the stones to man up and take care of the situation. So I've always been looking at Jeb Bush a little bit crosswise, if you know what I mean. I don't trust the guy. I don't think he's a conservative. I don't think he has any core principles. I think he's as bad, perhaps, as Mitt Romney, who I think, Mitt Romney, someone needs to flip him over and look and see if there's a 666 stamped on him somewhere, okay? That and Jeb Bush is in that same league, all right? Now, the Florida governor joined former Massachusetts governor Mitt Romney, well, imagine that, and House Republican Whip Eric Cantor on Saturday at a small pizza parlor in Arlington for the inaugural event of the National Council for a New America, NACNA. NACNA. The National Council for a New America. What's up with these Republicans? I'm happy with the America we had 175 years ago. I don't want a new America. And I certainly don't want a new America being run by Jeb Bush and Mitt 666 Romney. Thank you very much. Now, Mr. Romney, okay, we're not going to read about Mr. Oh, he said, what does Mitt Romney say? He says, quote, "Let's not underestimate the people of America. Let's make sure and listen to the people of America. Listen to what they're feeling and get their ideas." Listen to what they're feeling, Mitt. What are you, Bill Clinton? You want to go feel people's pain? This is what passes for conservative Republican viable candidates for the 2012 election, ladies and gentlemen. Surely all is lost. Now, NACNA, with their, quote, national panel of experts out on their listening tour, is made up of, get this, folks, Mississippi Governor Haley Barbour, Louisiana Governor Bobby Jindal, Senator John Son of Cain of Arizona, Jeb Bush, and the aforementioned Antichrist, Mitt Romney. Possible Antichrist. I don't want to jump to any conclusions. They say the goal of the listening tour is not to recast their party. Well, don't bother recasting it. You might want to put a cast on your party because it's like a broken appendage and it's about to fall off into the dustbin of history. I don't know what this... You know, if the point is not to recast your party, what is the point, Jeb? What is the point, Mitt? Why are we having leaders named Jeb and Mitt? What's up with that? But what is your point? Is it to look as stupid as possible, as milquetoast as possible, while still expensing travel and meals to the saps who fund NACNA? Or maybe, more sinister, it's to ruin the burgeoning political career of one Bobby Jindal. Sing it, Tom. Talk to me. Tom Petty, ladies and gentlemen. Now, there's a guy who was never addicted to anything, right? All right. Now, I got another story here in the politics file from Colon Cancer Powell, and he's basically of the same opinion as Jeb, although he's been excluded from the listening tour. I'm not sure why. He says Americans do want to pay taxes for services, and Americans are looking for more government in their life, not less. The sad thing, folks, the scary thing, is that Colon Cancer Powell is probably right at this point. I mean, based on everything I see, the whole country seems to be rushing headlong into the arms of socialism. It's depressing, frankly. I'm not going to talk anymore about Colon Cancer Powell because I frankly don't care. Let's move on. Another burgeoning career. Oh, yeah, Bobby Jindal. I thought maybe that guy was a conservative and maybe he had a future. But now that he's gone on tour with John McCain, Jeb Bush, and Mitt Romney, I mean, that's just, I put a fork in him. He's done. You know, he's all finished, Bobby. We had high hopes for you. But the Republican Party may have a future yet. From the LA Times, Bristol Palin is now an advocate of, she's an advocate of, she's against teen pregnancy somehow. Yeah, she's against it. On NBC's Today Show, she was accompanied by her father, Todd Palin, and her four-month-old son, Trip. Trip? We got Mitt, we got Jeb, we got Trip. The Republicans got us. For the next 40 years, it's going to be a disaster. Jeb, Mitt, Trip. Anyway, what's her name? Bristol Palin, I'm sorry. Bristol Palin, who is herself an unwed teen mother, is now the spokesperson for the Candies Foundation to prevent teen pregnancy, which I guess this is her way of saying she's going to try and not get pregnant again.
She's against marriage, too.
Yeah, she is against marriage, at least marrying the particular guy who knocked her up. Let's see. She talked on the Today Show about how her life has changed since she had a baby. She pitched abstinence if possible and protection if not. Well, young Bristol, see, it's the if not possible. When you imply to kids that abstinence is not possible, they will immediately move right to that position, okay, Bristol? What you need to do is encourage people that abstinence is possible. Of course, Bristol Palin may not be the best person to carry this message forward, but that should be the message, young Bristol. Bristol says she loves her son, adding that he's, quote, not a mistake, he's a blessing, unquote. Still, she said her life has been thrown into a tempest of diapers, sleepless nights, and milk bottles. Her goal, she says, is to save even one teenage girl from an unexpected pregnancy with unintended consequences. She wants to save even one teenage girl. Bristol, that's probably a reasonable goal, given your situation and your history. How much money? They'll probably blow $500,000 there at the Candies Foundation, and Bristol will possibly save one teenage girl. Speaking of, now that's a wed. You're a wed mother. Yeah, I'll tell you, folks. We got a 7-year-old. We got a 2-year-old. We got a 3-week-old. And frankly, if we weren't a team, I don't see how it could be done. I know there's no way that I could take care of these children. And I know that were my wife forced to take care of them on her own and go to work or go to school or do anything else, that she'd end up in a mental institution. So, you know, unwed motherhood is a significant issue. Bristol says she loves her baby Trip, but she won't marry the kid's rather thick-headed but not bad-looking dad. You know, the guy's got potential. I'm sure he's basically a moron, like most kids who've been put through the public school factories these days. But Bristol should really think about her child. She really loves her son, Trip. She needs to think about him more than about herself. And she needs to marry this bozo that she was stupid enough to sleep with and do something responsible. And then maybe 10 or 20 years from now, Bristol and her boyfriend, whose name escapes me, I don't care. Actually, I should try to find his name.
Levi.
Bristol and Levi, were they to man up and just, you know, act like adults here and do the right thing? Get married, get a loser job, make no money, work like a slave to raise the kid. 20 years from now, they might be able to influence someone to do something right. But I wouldn't look forward to it. I wouldn't hold my breath, so to speak. All right. Now, let's move on. We're running out of time. This always happens to me. I've got a bunch of stuff left, and I'm almost out of time. From the Sacramento Bee, Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger said this Tuesday past that it's time to study whether to legalize and tax marijuana for recreational use. Yeah. Advocates of marijuana legalization hailed the fact that Schwarzenegger endorsed studying a once taboo political subject. Yeah, we got a quote from Arnold. Do we have actual tape? All right. All right. Roll that tape.
Well, I think it's not time for legalization. But I think it's time for a debate. I think all of those ideas creating extra revenues, I'm always for an open debate on it. And I think we ought to study very carefully what other countries are doing that have legalized marijuana and other drugs. What effect does it have on those countries?
So, that was Arnold Schwarzenegger. That really wasn't that good. Anyway, So Arnold Schwarzenegger, now he says, let's study legalizing marijuana. You know what that means, folks? Marijuana will be legalized in California. It's just like the queers in the early 90s that broached the subject of equal rights for homosexuals. Now they've got more rights than they know what to do with. The homosexuals are pouring out of the closet with rights up the yin-yang, so to speak. And the subject was broached in the early 90s. Now Schwarzenegger broaches the subject of legalizing and taxing marijuana. So you can bet that's coming, folks. And I'm sure that's going to help the situation, right? That's what we need. More stoned teenage kids and adults, for crying out loud. Anyway, the folks, the geniuses in California estimate that legalizing marijuana would raise an estimated $1.34 billion annually. Ha! Right. You chump morons. Anyway, so, you know, people do stupid things when they're desperate for money. And case in point, Arnold. Arnold's being very stupid. Let's see, Barack Obama in the politics file from the London Times. Barack Obama's going to take a hard line against Israel. He's going to insist that Israel endorse a two-state solution. Apparently, Barack's been not only debating the legalization of marijuana, he's been participating in the partaking. I don't care about that story. That's more Barack Obama stuff. The economy, well, folks, we may have hit bottom. It may be a sucker's rally. Who knows? But one thing's for sure. The bills are going to come due pretty soon. Somebody's got to pay for the 10 trillion chickens that Barry Ho stuck in the pots of America. And that's all I got. Okay, I don't care about that story. Maine has legalized homosexual marriage. Let's see here. Making it the fifth state to approve the practice and moving New England closer to allowing it throughout the region. This was one of the goals of the freak homosexual movement back in the, from starting in the 70s. They wanted New England for some reason. They broached the subject. They set their goal. And now New Hampshire is also poised to legalize homosexual marriage. And that would leave Rhode Island as the region's sole holdout state. How long can Rhode Island stand the onslaught of the extra S's? All right, let's move on. What do we want to close with, ladies and gentlemen? Oh, here we go. Well, I want to talk quickly. The Pope was in Jordan, and he apologized yet again. This is like the Pope's 15th apology for quoting another theologian who said that Islam was violent. Well, guess what? The Muslims are not happy with his apology. It wasn't quite an apology enough. Sheikh Yusuf Abu Hussein says, "We wanted him to clearly apologize. Clearly, what the Pope said in 2006 about the Prophet Muhammad is untrue. Islam did not spread through the power of the sword. It's a religion of tolerance and faith. And if he does not apologize, we will cut off his head." No, I made up that last part. Just based on observations I've made over. Anyway, so the Muslims are not happy with the Pope. He didn't grovel sufficiently. And finally, ladies and gentlemen, now this is just a sad story. This is relating back to the swine flu pandemic fears that have gripped the world over the past 10 days or so. Dateline Port-au-Prince, Haiti, from the Associated Press. Haitian officials rejected a Mexican aid ship carrying 77 tons of much-needed food aid because of swine flu fears. That's right. That's Haiti, ladies and gentlemen. First of all, you know your country is in really bad shape when you've got aid ships showing up from Mexico, okay? You know things are not going well in the voodoo paradise of Haiti when they're having to accept aid from Mexico. Anyway, and what's the deal with the Dominican Republic? They just passed a constitution that declared that all human beings are persons with a right to life from the moment of conception right through to natural death. And they seem to be doing all right, and they share the same chunk of dirt right there in the Caribbean. So, Kate Lesson for all you kiddos out there. Bad government kills people. Bad religion kills people. And when you devolve to the point that you're accepting aid ships from Mexico, It's time to change something. Religious leaders, political leaders, something's got to change. All right, this is the Weekly Worldview. I'm Doug McBurney. Thanks for being here. I want to thank my friends at American Right to Life out at KGov Radio, my good friends at Denver Bible Church, all the folks at Personhood USA, the wonderful website Theology Online, and of course, as always, my other brother, Daryl, for making it all happen here in the Weekly Worldview studios. I'll be back with you next week. Until then, may the grace of our Lord go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.